Okay, good afternoon, folks. It is Tuesday, April the 19th, 2022, and it is 3:03 p.m. First item on our agenda is the roll call. Spencer H. Smith, Mayor, is present. Jennifer McCann, Mayor Pro Tem, has an excused absence. Michael Blomquist, Place 2.
Michael Blomquist, Councilman, Place 2, is present.
Okay, thank you. Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine, Place 3.
This is Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine, Place 3, present.
Okay, thank you. Linda Nash, Place 4.
Linda Nash, Place 4, present.
Okay, thank you. Sam Howley, Place 5, has an excused absence. City Manager David Mitchell.
City Manager David Mitchell, present.
Okay, thank you. City Secretary Julie Helsham.
City Secretary Julie Helsham, present.
Okay, thank you. We do have a quorum. Next item is item number 2, presentation by citizens. Citizens who desire to address the council on any matter may do so during this item. Please understand that while the council appreciates hearing your comments, state law, Texas Government Code, Section 551.042 prohibits them from, one, engaging in discussion other than providing a statement of specific factual information or reciting existing city policy, and two, taking action other than directing staff to place the matter on a future agenda. Please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Do we have anyone that wants to make a presentation? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to our third item, which is presentation by outside agencies. And also, just want to let you know, I'm wearing my Tree City USA hat, Mr. Ace, so sell the product. So that's all. Okay, number one, receive and discuss a presentation from Clean Independent School District Superintendent Dr. John M. Kraft for an update regarding enrollment, academic programs, projected growth, and future, current and future KISD facilities. City Manager.
Thank you, Mayor. Of course, we have with us Dr. John Kraft, and we're excited to have him give another update on the many things happening in KISD. So with that, Mayor, I'll turn it over to Dr. Kraft.
Great. Am I live? Okay. I don't need to do anything?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, thank you, City Manager Mitchell, Mayor Smith, council members. It's great to be with you. I can happily say, I think probably the last presentation, we're in a different place. I mean, we're stabilizing. We're seeing, and I'll talk about some enrollment numbers, but we're seeing kind of this turning of the tide from just where we were in regards to COVID and everything that we were working to mitigate at the last presentation. So I feel like that we're on a really, really positive trajectory and going forward, and we've got some really exciting things. So I'll jump right into it. Current school year, we're actually down to about 6 weeks, believe it or not, and we're going to be graduating about 2,600 seniors. And of course, we've put a lot of time and effort into the summer learning platform, which is going to be pretty robust. Obviously, one of our objectives right now is to recapture the ground that we've lost as a result, really, of the COVID learning loss. And so we'll be having some pretty expansive summer school learning opportunities, both for acceleration as well as remediation or recapturing credits going on across the district. In fact, all 30 of our elementary campuses are going to be having summer school. So it's really going to be almost a year-long school year, to be honest. I'll quickly talk a little bit about the construction. We've still got Killeen High School and, of course, Chaparral High School opening next school year underway. We're going to be naming some facilities here in the coming weeks, and then, like I say, just overall some things that we're looking at and looking forward to in the coming months. I mentioned closing the gaps. This is obviously one of our primary objectives right now, and we're making ground. We're definitely closing some of the learning loss gaps that we've experienced. We're utilizing a measure of academic progress, which is an NWEA product for the most part. Those, along with our curriculum unit assessments, which are really teacher-driven, district-driven unit assessments, which may entail, you may be hearing, well, we're testing a lot. Well, we are. We're assessing quite a bit because we're really trying to get a good grasp as to where are the gaps, where are our students. If you kind of think about what transpired since March of 2020, in many cases we may have third graders that were reading at the beginning of the year on a first grade level. And the reason being is because it may have been about a year and a half since that first grader, when we closed, went home and didn't return until they were in the third grade. And there was really no such thing as a retention for the past 2 years. I mean, the students were, for the most part, promoted. And so there's been a really large task that the teachers have been charged with in ensuring that the students are on grade level, but then also ensuring that they have acquired the skills that they may have been deficient or have lost during that time period. We're in a position right now still of being able to offer both breakfast and lunches, free meals, to all students across all campuses. Unless this program, which is a national program, changes, it is set to expire this summer. And so we're looking now at community eligibility programs and trying to expand those programs through competitive grants, through USDA, to try to, like I say, continue to provide as many free meals as possible. I think we're probably going to be able to provide the free breakfast program across the district again. The lunches, it gets a little bit more complicated. But like I say, that program is expected to expire unless there's legislation to expand going forward. Pain point. Michael, go ahead.
Dr. Kraft, how many students actually take advantage of that? I mean, across the...
You'd be surprised, quite a bit, over half. Now, many students still, especially at the high school level, still they elect to leave and go. But at the elementary and middle school, the vast majority.
Okay.
They're taking advantage of... Of course, there's not a lot of other options other than bringing lunch from home or breakfast from home, but... They are taking advantage of the program. In fact, from a reimbursement standpoint, we're more than breaking even. So that's usually a pretty good indicator that we're doing pretty well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Recruitment and retention. We spent about 3.5 hours this morning with our board of trustees. Really talking about a compensation package that is all focused around the recruitment and retention. This is our pain point. Again, aside from closing the achievement gaps, closing the learning loss, this is a true pain point. We have about 280 teacher vacancies currently right now. Usually, at the beginning of a school year, to kind of put this in perspective, we're somewhere between 60 and 80 teachers short, which across 50 campuses are able to function. It's not as significant as it sounds, but this year has been truly unique, and last year was also unique. So we're working right now pretty diligently on trying to be pretty aggressive, more than competitive with our compensation and salary, and knowing just what kind of bidding war we're all going to be in acquiring teachers to fill vacancies that we currently have, but then also vacancies that may be opening over the course of the next couple of months. So the recruitment and retention, when you hear about the teacher shortage and the struggles that districts across the state, across the nation are experiencing with just staffing, they're real. This is a real issue, and that's what really I was articulating this morning, is we have got to make sure we get this one right, because if we don't, the ramifications are really significant. Right now, teachers are covering other classes, they're consolidating classes, they're taking on additional teaching responsibilities, forgoing conference periods. I mean, they're doing a lot to just ensure that we're able to provide adequate educational services. And it's been a real struggle, and we've got to try to provide the relief, i.e. fully staff our campuses so that teachers are not in that position again. So a lot of energy, effort, and resources are going towards this endeavor, and will be over the next several weeks. A few celebrations. James Cook, you see in the upper left, he is our Region 12 Teacher of the Year. He's at Cedar Valley Elementary School. Just an awesome, awesome individual. In fact, I've kidded James and his wife, Kina, who teaches at Killeen High School. If we could just clone them, we would. I mean, they are phenomenal educators. You see our tenor bass at Patterson Middle School was selected to perform at the Southwestern American Choral Directors Association conference, which is a really, really big accolade. And they did a really fine job. We just learned that our community was named National Association of Music Merchants Best Community for Music Education. We're one of about 700 school districts across the nation that received this accolade, which is, it's a pretty big accomplishment for our fine arts department. You'll see we had seven high school students to TMA, all-state status in choir and orchestra. Our state champion, second go-around state champion, our senior from Ellison High School, Eamon Jimenez, won his class in wrestling. And we were talking about it earlier today. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, for the first time that I can recall being in the district, Harker Heights High School swept the district track meet in both boys and girls, JV and varsity district track meet, which doesn't happen. That's a huge accomplishment considering just how competitive our district is, UIL district is, particularly in track and field. So pretty awesome accomplishments across the board.
Dr. Jacqueline. Kraft, this is Jacqueline Soriano-Fontaine, place three. I mean, I think that's all wonderful that we recognize all the students that are doing great accomplishments. And as you know, we have our community salutes in our community. And it would be kind of nice, too, to recognize those that have signed up to serve in the armed forces.
Absolutely.
The next time around, because, I mean, they're the ones that defend. Yep. The opportunity for us to do the things that we do.
And we have a program forthcoming. I don't know the date, but we do. We recognize all those that have enlisted or are enlisting,
right,
and are graduating.
I'm a part of that.
Okay,
but what,
yeah,
I'm saying is when you present this, it would be kind of cool to
see.
Have, you know, X amount of numbers,
sure,
going into,
yeah,
the armed forces.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank
absolutely.
You.
Dr. Kraft, I think I've mentioned to you before that we've got a good relationship with your folks at specifically Harker Heights High School, but the other schools that are physically located in Harker Heights as part of KISD. But the fact is that those people in the arts, academics, athletics that are superlative performers, that we recognize them here in the chambers as a Bright Star Central Texas and have their coaches and have their parents,
absolutely,
and teachers,
yeah,
come to do that, because that's something we want to emphasize, and hopefully we can augment what you and,
yeah,
your,
yeah,
folks are doing.
I think that y'all are pretty much direct communication in ensuring that you're receiving those accolades and awards. If you're not, we can definitely make sure that it happens.
Right. So,
and we appreciate you doing that. I mentioned graduation. Again, we have five this year. We'll soon have six. You see the schedule before you. We'll kick off with the Early College High School on May 25th, which is a Wednesday. You'll see we kind of have to spread them out because of the limited space. And, of course, we'll be hosting these at the Bell County Expo. And then we wrap up Saturday evening, May 28th at 7 p.m. with Harker Heights High School. And we anticipate that will be the largest graduating class. It and Ellison are usually the largest graduating classes. I mentioned the summer learning opportunities. Again, you'll see the dates. At the elementary level, what we're kind of implementing a little bit of a unique model. I mentioned that we'll be working on kind of the acceleration piece along with remediation and anything that we need to be providing as far as services to catch kids up. And so we've partnered campuses together so that there's an acceleration at one campus, and then in close proximity there's also the remediation. And so in some cases students may have the opportunity to engage in both. The acceleration is going to look a little bit differently in the sense that it's more innovative, like science camps. A lot more hands-on, project-based learning type activities. We implemented it last year, and we learned that, okay, we've got to look to expand these programs because there was a lot of interest. Similar at the middle school, we'll be focusing on some writing camps and some other more refined subject matters for the acceleration piece. And then, of course, at the high school, again, we'll be allowing for credit recovery, but we're also going to be allowing for really primarily dual credit acceleration. So if students want to try to jump ahead, particularly like an early college high school student, knock out a couple of college classes that are also count as high school credits, they'll be able to do so. What that does is it frees up particularly space in their senior schedule so that they can take other electives, maybe even go to the career center and engage in learning opportunities that are really going to benefit them upon graduating. So like I say, you'll see the dates, and it's going to be a really busy summer. This is really the most robust summer learning summer school program we've ever put together. We've got a lot of activities going on, which is a good thing. As far as construction, we do have Chaparral High School in its final stages, and Killeen High School will also be kind of wrapping up here in the coming months. Chaparral, as you recall, this is absolutely going to be the largest high school, not only in Killeen ISD, but really in the Central Texas region. It's almost 450,000 square feet. It is a very large footprint. It will serve upwards of 3,100 students pretty comfortably, actually. Like I say, we're really excited at the progress that has been made in bringing this online. In fact, I just received some updated aerials just a few minutes ago. They're in fact laying the track as we speak. So like I say, we're really close. We do not foresee now any delays, having been dried in, and in fact, the interior of the envelope is actually upon the final stages of completion. In fact, they're landscaping as we speak. So pretty excited about bringing Chaparral on. Of course, it will provide the relief, much needed relief, to Harker Heights High School, so that hopefully here in the coming months we'll be able to remove all of the portable buildings and those will no longer be an eyesore. We'll have a dedication ceremony on August 4th at 2 p.m. And like I say, we're going to be really excited to introduce the community and, of course, our newest students and staff to the facility, and really provide this as a great resource for the community going forward. And they are the Bobcats. You see the mascot. You see the school colors. The colors are really very, very close to Texas A&M Central Texas. And that was kind of by design for maybe some future endeavors with Texas A&M University Central Texas.
We'll just make sure they're not averse to orange, though. I have a question, though, too.
Again, sir.
As we went through the redistricting and the demographics of that, and are y'all focusing on that issue as far as some of the concerns the parents have as far as the children being moved?
Because we are, yeah. So that's a good question, and I'll address it through a couple of avenues. We're allowing pretty lenient grandfathering and/or transfer request. So, in essence, if the students are seeking to remain at Harker Heights High School, they can do so, assuming they can provide their own transportation. We're also allowing, like say, a pretty open transfer policy. If in the event that a Harker Heights High School student that may not be zoned for Chaparral wants to attend Chaparral, we're going to have the capacity, we're going to be able to make that accommodation. So I really think that upon the hearings and the second iteration and ultimately the recommendation that was made to the board, I haven't heard any complaints or concerns really since. The one concern that I have is Harker Heights High School, even though we're relieving the campus, is still going to be pretty full. And so we're looking at, through the renovation of Heights, as well as Ellison, as well as Shoemaker, potentially an expansion to create a little bit more square footage to provide greater relief. Of all the campuses, Heights is going to be the closest to capacity, and it's going to be pretty close. We're dedicated to, like say, alleviating the need for portable buildings, but it's going to be pretty tight within the envelope. I think that over the course of time, as Chaparral matures and kind of the feeder patterns and the attendance zones work themselves out, it will get better. But this first year with the opening of Chaparral, it's still going to be a pretty large campus. In fact, based on rezoning, Heights will be our only 6A high school. The others will be 5A.
I just think that, again, since we have such a transient community here with large military population, a lot of people don't understand that of where you've come from. They don't understand why the fences are up. They don't understand why you want to get rid of the portables, the numerous reasons why you want to do that. Because some of them maybe come from places that never seen those.
Right.
Okay, so I think that part of that is that re-education is going to be something that you're going to have to continue to do as people, ebb and flow into here. And the other concern that I have is that do y'all hear, or do you have anything as far as leakage, as far as with this movement, as far as people moving to Belton ISD or to be in Slato ISD because of the friction that's going on with this?
As far as the friction with the opening of Chaparral?
Or the demographics that we have as far as moving things around, where if they could go down to Slato or one of the two Belton, and they went through this nut roll here themselves recently, but...
Yeah, not so much. I think that the difference with our district, obviously, is, I mean, this is high school number 6. When I would venture to say when Ellison High School was coming online, there was probably a little bit more friction because it was, anytime you're breaking up and you're going to two high schools, there's just some hard feelings. This one is a little bit different. I think that the community absolutely understands the need and has understood the need for quite some time. We need to alleviate Heights as well as Ellison High School. They're just grossly over capacity. So I haven't sensed a lot of resistance. In fact, the calls and requests that I've received have actually been just the opposite of Cove, of Salado, Belton. Hey, do you have an open transfer that we could bring our students to Chaparral? So similar to the Early College High School program, similar to the Career Center, I mean, we try to make those accommodations if parents are willing to usually make the commute or allow the students to make the travel. In most cases, it's individuals that are working here in the community and can just bring their kids kind of as a convenience. I've not really seeing any impact at all with students transferring out of the district as a result of opening Chaparral. It's really more or less the opposite. Killeen High School, again, this is equally exciting. If you haven't been down 38th Street and seen Killeen High School, you might not recognize it. It has been a really, really, neat project to see come to fruition. And you can kind of start to see I think I may have mentioned the kind of the new area versus the older area. I don't know if this has a laser. I don't want to show you, Jerry. Okay. All right. Perfect. That wasn't it. That was not. Sorry. Thank you. Okay. So 38th Street kind of runs, you can't really see it on this aerial, but it runs obviously north and south. So all of this area, this is the new academic building. This is the new commons area, new entryway, which is really pretty grand. This is a new courtyard. That's an astroturf area. This is all office space area. Of course, we have the auditorium, and they're just now putting the final touches on brand new fine art. So this is a band hall. This is a choir room. I mean, it is pretty phenomenal. They're demoing or have demoed this section and area, as well as this section. This is going to be the new athletic locker room area, classroom, special education support. Like I say, the academic, new academic wing, two floors is open. They've been able to move in. So it's just been a, it's been a massive project, but it's really been pretty awesome to see come to fruition. And the staff and the students have been pretty remarkable because it has been a phasing transition that's been not without some challenges, as you can probably imagine. Middle school 15, this will be the district's third middle school STEM program. We're projected to open middle school 15 for the 23-24 school year. I have a feeling that, it, again, it's probably going to be just about the right time. We were able to alleviate the need for portal buildings in our middle schools just about 2 years ago, but if we don't continue to progress and move forward, we're going to be behind again. And so to kind of give you a landmark, just south of Chaparral High School, that's the middle school site. The schematic design was just approved last month, and so we are in the process of accepting recommendations from the community for names, which we'll be discussing with the board on Tuesday the 26th. So that window closes on the 22nd, and like I say, we're pretty excited about bringing on the 15th middle school. It'll be very, very similar to Nolan and Smith. We're making a few tweaks, modifications, but for the most part, the footprint is pretty similar. As far as forward planning is concerned, we obviously are registering current students as well as new students to the district. May 1st, we say current student registration ends, but the reality is we'll be registering all throughout the summer. May 2nd and 3rd is our pre-K kindergarten orientation across all of our campuses. The one area that we haven't quite recovered from a COVID effect yet is actually pre-K and kindergarten. We're still about 800 students off of where we were pre-pandemic. And so as Dave and I were talking just a few minutes ago earlier before the meeting started, pre-K and kindergarten is not necessarily compulsory, so there's not truancy associated. Parents really have the option of whether they want to start their student in kindergarten or pre-K if they qualify or not. So I anticipate that that number's probably going to come back here in the very near future, i.e. Next school year. As I mentioned, you know, again, we're going to be offering several job fairs, both in person as well as virtual, over the next couple of months. Our next one is at Harker Heights High School on June 2nd, and we're going to be working pretty diligently, particularly to fill the vacancies that we have in our classrooms right now. I mentioned, pre-K orientation. I mean, this is the area that if I were to say, well, what is the effect of COVID, this is the area that's a little bit concerning. And I do understand every family has a little bit of a different circumstance and has to take different precautions, but I'm a little bit concerned about our pre-K students not returning back, because as you well know, that's an opportunity for students that may be disadvantaged for whatever reason to really try to catch up and be prepared for those primary years of their education. So I'm hoping to see those numbers rebound here in the coming months. And of course, you have our contact information. From an enrollment standpoint, we're being pretty conservative in regards to our projection. We're actually projecting about 0.5%. Now, that's probably intentionally a little bit low. Typically, we see about a 1% annual growth rate. I think we'll probably recognize that, but we're just wanting to be a little bit conservative, particularly as it drives our budgeting process, until we really kind of see the after effect of COVID. That's going to put us just shy of 45,000 students for next year. I really anticipate that Heights will be our largest high school. There's no question. They'll be, in a 6A district. We'll have Ellison Shoemaker and Killeen High School in a 5A Division I school districts, and then Chaparral will be in a 5A Division II school district. So you can pick a Thursday or Friday night at any point in time in the fall, and I promise you, you can go either go to Buckley Stadium or out to Chaparral High School, and you can catch a high school football game, because we're going to be spread out playing all over Texas, basically. So other than that, like I say, there, a lot of things are going on. So we're wrapping up the school year. It's been a good school year. It's been a challenging school year. And the challenges have been really associated with staffing and just trying to ensure that we've got classrooms covered, that we're hiring as quickly as we possibly can. It's just been kind of an unusual school year from that standpoint. And I would love to say, as I was visiting with one of our advocacy groups yesterday, that this is all going to subside and we're all going to be kind of back as early as next year. But I think that the staffing is something that's going to probably plague us, unfortunately, for a couple of years. Just having to revitalize the preparation programs, whether it be alt certification or traditional education certification programs, it's just going to take a little while. The numbers just aren't there right now. And so we're going to see the impact and the effect. And that's, again, part of the reason why we're having to really focus a lot of our efforts and energy on competitive compensation and how we keep and of course, recruit new teachers to the profession. So I'll be glad to try to answer any questions.
I just have the one about, this is Jackson Serena from St. Place 3. I always have the one about the elementary school. Anything about elementary school?
Which one?
Elementary school.
So we've got a strategic facility planning item that's going to be on a future board agenda. We're refining some numbers right now. The Harker Heights Elementary replacement project, as well as Peebles replacement projects, are still slated, and they're part of our strategic facility plan. They are going to probably require a bond. I don't know if y'all have priced anything from a construction standpoint here recently, but it is staggering. When we started this, to kind of put this in perspective, when we started the 2018 bond program, and we started the planning and preparation, we had projected Chaparral High School to be in and around $146 million all in, which was just staggering at the time, if you recall. We built it for about $126 million, so it came in well under. We timed it just about right. That high school, built today, if we were to bid it and build it today, would be well over $200 million. So we're seeing right now construction escalation for education facilities at 2% a month. So 24% annually is what we're wrestling with. I don't think it's sustainable. In fact, I'm willing to almost bet that it's not sustainable, but I just don't know when it plateaus. So timing is everything. Like I say, the Harker Heights replacement elementary is still very much slated. We're also looking at building a replacement Nolanville elementary school that is also going to help Harker Heights, obviously, in preparation for everything that's going in up and down Warriors Path, so adjacent to Nolan Middle School. So we've got quite a few projects that are being worked on right now, just as far as preliminary planning, but it's still in the works. You know, it was part of the 2020 bond, and then things just went sideways, as you all know. We'll hopefully be back there here in the coming months and having those real conversations about timing and what all needs to happen to bring it online.
Mayor, the last thing that I have is I just want to say thank you to Dr. Kraft for listening to the people at your conferences that you had.
and making accommodations for those that wanted to keep their kids in Harker Heights and.
Oh, absolutely.
That was excellent. So it's good to hear.
I probably shot myself in the foot because I'm going to have a junior at Harker Heights next year, and I'm going to have a freshman at Chaparral High School. So that may be an interesting household dynamic for the Kraft household, but I completely understand, especially when students they start their freshman year at Heights or at Ellison, and they get I don't want to say indoctrinated, but I mean they're bought in, right? They become a part of whether it be extracurricular activities or clubs or friends and just everything, probably all of the above. It's important to try to keep that intact. So completely understand, like I say, we will make it work.
Thank you. That's all I have, Mayor.
I just have a couple of things. Will you still be providing lunch in the summer, Dr. Kraft?
Yes. Lunch
that's
is in the
part of that other program.
Summer. But then, unless, like say, the legislation changes, it will be free and or reduced lunch. The program will be back. So it'll be back prior to, I guess, a year and a half ago, where students will have to qualify. Now, breakfast we're working on trying to provide universally as a district program, but the lunch piece is probably going to be based upon a free and or reduced lunch, unless legislation changes, which could.
Maybe.
Yeah, it very well could.
And also, what grades do you see the most teacher shortages?
Ooh. It's not as much grades as it is content subject areas. The two that I can just, I mean, are fresh on the mind without even having to look at numbers, bilingual. Bilingual teachers are very hard to come by. In fact, we're looking at stipends. Most districts are offering anywhere between $6,000 and $10,000 on top of base salary if they're a bilingual certified teacher. Self-contained special education is a close second, and I mean a very close second across all levels. These are usually more intense programs. These are also really difficult professionals to hire. The critical shortage areas, particularly at the secondary, again, math, science, we're seeing challenges in English as well. At the elementary level, again, it's not as much grade level because in most cases, teachers, once they're certified, they can teach any grade level at the elementary level as much as it is the content-specific areas. I'm just trying to think of... It's really the special education and bilingual content areas that we're really struggling with, subject areas that we're really struggling with.
So would you be looking at the stipend for all of those areas, not just the bilingual?
Oh, absolutely. We are. In fact, we're going to be proposing some pretty significant changes just to keep up with the market.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Would you care to comment on the federal impact aid and what you're looking at with that?
Yes, I will. So we've been pretty fortunate in the sense that we've kind of been in this hold harmless position the last 2 years. So what I mean by that is that the counts have not been utilized. Usually there's an annual count to determine qualification, so that the counts have not been utilized for the last 2 years. So that has really helped us because, as you're familiar, one of my concerns has been, okay, if we fall out of the heavy impact aid, what we call a B2 status, we start to see this gradual reduction in that revenue source going forward. So we're actually in a pretty good shape for the next two fiscal years now as a result of the hold harmless provisions that has been enacted and signed into law. In fact, this last round with the NDA was just reauthorized. So we're actually okay for right now. Once I have this year's impact aid numbers, I'll be able to provide a better vantage of okay, we need to start making some adjustments, or we may be okay. Part of me kind of thinks that we're, because our 35% threshold is our piece of the legislation that we had written into the NDA back in 2017. As we've seen the number of pre-K kindergarten students reduced, I think proportionally that has probably helped us from a military, federally connected standpoint, right, believe it or not. It sounds like a strange, but I think that has probably allowed us to just creep over the 35%, whereas, as if you recall, we were on a trajectory where our civilian, non-federally connected student population was far outpacing our federally connected. And so I think in kind of a weird way, the last couple of years has probably helped us from an impact a count standpoint. Now, do we sustain that? Probably not. The reality is this: we're growing, and maybe the numbers right now don't reflect that, but you don't have to drive very far to see that there are a lot of homes still being put on the ground, that I think a lot of that may be investment properties, that may be becoming rental properties, future rental properties, but I do think that we're probably going to see the students following that kind of growth. I don't see any really other option. Yeah.
Griff, I'll just say that we're in the same boat you are in terms of employment. It's hard to find workers, so don't feel alone out there on that island. All the cities are struggling with that as well.
Yeah, it's that's been the anomaly that it's been hard for me to get my grasp on, is just what has been the trigger that's created the shortages to the point of just being so perplexed as to, well, what happened? I mean, it's just really an anomaly.
We've had the same discussions with HR here. What has happened out there that's changed so drastically? But it has.
But we're going to keep working. I think that, like I say, eventually there'll be a recovery period and we'll be back. It's just maybe have some challenging months ahead still. So. Thank you all. Thank you for your continued support. We'll definitely continue to promote, particularly our students that are doing awesome things here within the schools in Harker Heights. And if you want to come visit campuses, we're open. In fact, we celebrated our volunteers with a luncheon just yesterday. And I'm happy to say that I think that we're definitely on a positive trajectory and getting really back to what I call normal, but we're on a good path going forward. So appreciate your continued support.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thanks.
Y'all can take me off your email list. My son is done.
Oh, once you're on the email list, you never come off.
Which one is that? The guidance counselors or?
Them too.
Kaylin was late to school today.
All right, folks, that was really good. Okay, next item is paragraph 4, regular business. Number 1, discuss and consider approving the resolution of the City Council of the City of Harker Heights, Texas, authorizing the city manager to negotiate and sign a contract for emergency medical services, billing slant debt collections, and fire cost recovery services with Quick Med Claims, LLC, QMC in parentheses. Our chief.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Council. I appreciate the meeting opportunity to present this to you guys. We're kind of up against a wall here. So as you see here in your documentation, the city advertised for proposals for this EMS billing and debt collection and fire recovery services on January 9th, 2022 and January 16th, 2022. A total of 3 proposals packets were distributed, and on March 3rd of 2022 at 2 p.m., The sealed proposals for emergency medical services, billing, debt collections, and fire cost recovery services were opened, and the following proposals were received and met specifications. As you see there, Quick Med Claims LLC, Emergicon LLC, and Fire Recovery EMS. Fire Department, in conjunction with the Finance Department, had developed a committee for review of these proposals, and they were graded over EMS billing, debt collection, fire recovery, the ability to do that, Texas Ambulance Supplemental Payment Program, also known as TASP, the reports that they give, the costs associated with the vendor and vendor references. And the maximum available score is 100. And you will see below the scores, QuickMed Claims 90.5, Emergicon LLC 80.5, and Fire Recovery EMS LLC of 61. And at this time, staff recommends approval of adopting the resolution awarding a contract with QuickMed Claims LLC of San Antonio, Texas, for EMS billing, debt collection, and fire recovery services. Happy to answer any questions.
Michael.
Thank you, Mayor. This is Michael Bonfus, Councilman, Place 2. Chief Sims, for those five areas where the committee graded each of the respondents, were any of those areas particularly weighted, or were they all evenly weighted?
No, they had a different score. I apologize, I don't have the individual score in front of me. I can tell you that the ability to perform the job is graded pretty high. The TASP was graded rather high, and the others were graded down a little bit more.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions of the council?
No, sir.
Okay, Mr. Mitchell, anything else to add on that? Okay, it's regular business. Jackie.
Motion.
Go ahead, please.
Yes. This is Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine, Place 3, and I move to approve a resolution authorizing the city manager to renegotiate and sign a contract for EMS billing, debt collection, and fire recovery service to Quick Med Claims LLC of San Antonio, Texas, authorizing the city manager to act as executive officer and authorized representative in all matters pertaining to the contract and any other action desired.
Okay, thank you. And Councilmember Nash, we have a second.
Second the motion.
Okay, good. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion on the item? Okay, hearing none, I'll poll the council. Jennifer McCann, Mayor Pro Tem, has an excused absence. Michael Blomquist, Place 2.
It's Michael Blomquist, Councilman, Place 2. I vote yes.
Okay, thank you. This Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine, Place 3. How do you vote?
This is Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine, Place 3. I vote yes.
Okay, thank you. Linda Nash, Place 4. How do you vote?
Linda Nash, Place 4, I vote yes.
Okay, thank you. Sam Hallaby, Place 5, has an excused absence. And the motion passes unanimously, 3-0. Next item is paragraph 5, and time is 3:50, and we'll go ahead and adjourn the special meeting and call to order the workshop session. Item number 6, workshop discussion items. Number 1, receive and discuss a presentation on a proposed amendment to section 150 of the Harkrites Code of Ordinances to clarify the intent of the ordinance. Planning and Development Director.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I promise this one is not going to be that long. We had a fence and screening ordinance that was adopted originally in 1987. It's been amended 4 times with the last amendment in 2020. What we've run into is how it has been practiced over the years lends itself to needing some type of leniency and some guidance from city staff as far as when we can allow exceptions. For example, we have a few subdivisions when they were platted. Our ordinance says that if you have a home that's facing one street and another home on the same corner that's facing a different street, that you can't utilize the area. You have to have a bigger setback along the side of the parcel. And so what that means is in the image to the left, all of this area here between approximately the stop sign all the way back, that fence wouldn't be allowed to encroach out. It would have to come back because this house is facing this road and the other house is facing the other road. Well, what we're finding is that was allowed to be put in because it was constructed first and the house behind it was constructed second or several years down the road. And now it's time to replace these wooden fences. And so we're starting to see this issue creep up on us a lot in regards to, can we put the fence back where it was? In this particular case here, just as an example, the driveway to the house that's facing the other street is way back over here. And there's about 47 feet between it and the edge of this parcel that's facing the side street. What we would recommend is similar to our vegetation requirements. We have a 50 foot from an intersection or any type of access point where you can't have vegetation that encroaches in that line of sight for safety. What we're proposing with this ordinance change is that we take that driveway and go back 50 foot. And then from there, then the fence would be allowed to start and could encroach within that 20 foot easement on the side of the parcel. And then that way, it gets a little bit more yard space, takes into account special circumstances that don't have to be brought before our zoning board of adjustments that can be handled in-house by staff instead. From an engineering perspective, those site triangles that we have for visibility triangles, they're there. That's standard AASHTO requirements or engineering requirements and practices, and allows for a vehicle to be able to see. So we want the people coming out of their driveways to be able to see and the people turning the corners. And so that's why you have the two proposed changes to the ordinance before you for discussion today. And this one, it just highlights what those two recommended changes are. And the portion there in red is the same as our vegetation requirements, the 50 foot from the intersection. And so the intersection could be the intersection of two streets or the driveway or access point with the road.
This is Michael Bonfils, Councilman Place 2. Christina, on the fences, is there a difference in the code then that would stipulate between privacy fence that you couldn't see through versus like wrought iron or something that, or chain link that you could see through?
So right now, the difference in code is that it be 4 foot in height. So below the driver's eyesight is allowed within that particular area. But what we're seeing is most people want to put in the privacy fence, which would not be allowed because it goes over that restriction and it also prohibits the line of sight.
Right, because even with in some of those instances with the way those streets are, a 4 foot privacy, if it was for privacy fence, you still couldn't see a small child or something running along there. But you know, if it was a chain link fence or a wrought iron fence, you could much more easily see, you know, things coming one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. So we do have restrictions put on us by the state, so we can't look at the specific building materials, and so that's also caused a little bit of issue in regards to this.
Jackie.
Thank you, Mayor. This is Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine, Place 3. Christina, so is this new development that we're looking at, or are we going to have to go back to those houses that may be in this situation?
So what we're doing is we don't enforce it unless somebody comes in and tries to replace a fence. Okay. And so this is coming up more and more frequently in developments that have already been around for several years.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have, Mayor.
So not very many homes in our community fit that description. So there's only, because it's not widespread, one side of the house facing this way and the other one facing the other way.
Right.
So right now, we don't have it to where it could be exception house by house. We have to go by the ordinance.
Correct.
Right? Mm-hmm. So on this, it would change that if someone came in and they wanted to replace a fence, that's a 4 foot fence, and they wanted to replace it and they wanted to make it 6 feet, mm-hmm. but the house that's facing, you know, that's behind them, that those people can be able to see out their driveway, would they be able to have it 6 feet?
So what we would do is we would look case by case, and we would measure out from their driveway distance that 50-foot, and if that 6-foot fence that they're proposing on the adjacent lot doesn't encroach in that 50-foot, then they would be allowed to. Otherwise, we're looking at maybe they need to angle the back corner of their property in order to get that full 50-foot clearance from that driveway. Or they could put in a 4-foot. We see transitions sometimes, like from 6 to 8, they could do 4 to 6 in that little back corner if they wanted.
Just kind of graduate up to.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you.
Has the city been able to identify fences right now that have issues, so when they do need to be replaced, that they're going to have to comply? So do we have those targeted already?
So we don't have them targeted. We don't have a list. What we do is we look at each site case as they're brought in as a permit, right, and then we pull the history, we pull the codes at the time, and see if it complies.
Yeah, well, I'll give you a perfect example. One that I see every day is that if you come out in the trail onto Old Nolanville Road, that property on the left, that fence is out there, so everybody's got to scoot out just so they can see the traffic coming from down Old Nolanville Road. I don't know what the angles off somehow, so that's one for our hit list. So again, and it's a safety issue, especially if someone's heading trying to get out of there and somebody's heading eastbound on that and they're not doing 30 miles an hour, it causes a real problem. So okay, any other questions from the council? Okay, yes, anything else on there? Okay, pretty much a consensus to go forward and bring this back to us.
Yes, sir.
Okay, you got what you need?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Thank you. Okay, all right. Anything else that is on the agenda? Seeing none, the time is 3:59 and we're adjourned.